Thank you very much. We're going to call the Property Tax and Sales Tax Division meeting to order, and we're going to go a little out of order than what's on the agenda until more members get here. But we're going to start with Representative Hodge. If you don't mind, you've got House File 850. I think these are bills that will go quickly. And so we can't move that. We'll have to move it later when we do have a quorum. And so, Representative Hodge, thank you so much for being here, and please present your bill.
Thank you very much. House File 850 is a good model example of the relationship sometimes between the state and the county. And I used to think if the state was the father and the county was the child, because it's stronger, that we would have a case for child abuse. This is a good example of this the delayed cost for sexual predators when they're on hold waiting for their civil trial. It would be making sense that the state pays for half and the county pays for half. But what is happening is there is very few dollars coming in for that amount. And so I proposed a bill that if the state is not going to pay for their half, that they would at least allow that you would at least, we would at least allow the county to take this on a special levy so that they don't have to cut 4-H to pay for this bill. And that's what it's amounting to, and I have a testifier who is really knowledgeable from Stearns County, and she will introduce herself, Mr. Chair, if you so wish, and she'll give us a few minutes testifying. There may be other people in the audience, and MICA or one of the other county associations may want to testify also. Thank you.
Representative Hodge, thank you very much. Pleased to see. State your name.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Janet Reichstead, and I am here to speak in favor of House File 850. I am the Community Supports Division Director with Stearns County Human Services in St. Cloud. Human Services is the department of Stearns County that provides community corrections, public health, and social services. The County Social Services Agency has the responsibility of carrying out duties under Minnesota Statute Chapter 253B, the Civil Commitment Act. And generally, we intersect with the Commitment Act in assisting persons with mental illness, chemical dependency, or mental retardation who meet standards under the Act and need to be committed through the court for involuntary treatment of their illness. The way the Commitment Act works is that during the period of time leading up to the person's actual commitment hearing, the person can be held involuntarily at treatment facilities, either on what's called an emergency hold ordered by a physician or a judicial hold ordered by the court. And under the Minnesota Statute Chapter 256G, the Unitary Residence Act, counties are 100% responsible for paying the cost of care for persons who are on these holds awaiting their commitment hearing and determination by the court as to whether or not they should be committed. The Civil Commitment Act also has provisions for the commitment of persons who meet very specific definitions in the Act of the definition of a sexual psychopathic personality or a sexually dangerous person. And in general, these are persons who have had repeated or very severe sexual crimes. When these people have finished their prison sentence and are ready to be released into the community, there is a process whereby the county attorney may determine to pursue civil commitment for these sex offenders. If that happens, and if the county attorney decides that this person meets the standard to be committed potentially as a sexually dangerous or a sexual psychopathic personality, the court will then order that person to be held involuntarily in a treatment facility pending the outcome of their commitment hearing, similar to persons with mental illness and chemical dependency. However, normal commitment is for up to 6 months period of time, but sex offenders can be committed for an indefinite period of time. And therefore, they work quite extensively with their attorneys to try to avoid being civilly committed, and this legal maneuvering can lead to persons being on hold for months at a time as compared to the customary 14-day limit. The issue here is that, again, counties are responsible for paying 100% of those hold costs while that person is awaiting the decision about civil commitment. In the past 5 years, 2004 through 2008, the lowest amount paid by Stearns County for sex offender holds was about $40,000 for three offenders in 2006. The highest amount was slightly over $200,000 for five offenders in 2007. And I realize in light of the entire state budget, that may not sound like a lot of money, but I can tell you it is in our county. And with all the multiple needs that we need to meet. The potential release into the community of sex offenders who meet the civil commitment standards affects the public safety of the entire state, not just a single county. Therefore, hold costs should not be borne by the county real estate tax levy. Ideally, there would be a state appropriation so the costs could be shared by the state and county. There have been previous legislative attempts to mitigate costs to counties. The 1999 legislature amended the Commitment Act so that the state and county were each responsible for 50% of the hold costs. However, state funding responsibility was limited to the appropriated amount, and there has been no appropriation made since the 2000-2001 biennium. Last year, the Act was again amended to allow offenders currently serving a prison sentence currently in a Minnesota DOC facility to voluntarily elect to be held there. For offenders who elect this option, the cost to the county is $57 a day instead of $348 a day at the DHS treatment facility. However, there is no guarantee that offenders will choose this option. Due to current state and county budget issues, counties need additional relief from being solely responsible for sex offender commitment hold costs while also having levy limits imposed upon them. As mentioned earlier, the preferred solution would be to have hold costs borne by the state or shared between the state and counties. However, given the current state budget situation, that may not be realistic. I'm here to say that House File 850 would be an appropriate measure to assist counties in paying sex offender hold costs and maintaining public safety.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the audience that would like to speak in for or against House File 850?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, whose membership consists of 13 of the counties, including Stearns County. I'm here on behalf of our organization to endorse this legislation. Counties statewide have seen a dramatic rise in the number of referrals for civil commitments since 2003 for issues that I think many of you who have been here for a while remember. Currently, our costs for the holds for these individuals, which due to the lack of the state appropriation that Ms. Rigstead referred to, are running $7 to $8 million annually. Because of uncertainty on behalf of the Department of Revenue as to whether this constitutes a matching fund or not, I have to fit this within our regular levy limit base, which, as you hopefully know by now, is only going to increase by 1.2% for 2010 and by 0.5% for 2011. We need any relief we can get to deal, particularly with these, frankly, state costs that we are being forced to borne under the current status of the state's fiscal arrangement.
Thank you very much. Anyone else for or against House File 850? Yeah, last comments there, Representative Hall?
Thank you very much. And I brought this forward. I know that it's just a little pinch, but those pinches add up for the county, and we've got them bruised pretty well. And this is an opportunity for you to look and review and see where it's happening and in other areas. And I would appreciate any consideration for the relief to that levy or the funding of this inequity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to do one more bill that's very much related. Representative Dietrich, House File 962. We can't lay over any of these. We don't have a quorum yet. But while she's making her way down, we have some ninth grade students from St. Louis Park here that is watching this division, and they are part of the Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government toured educational program. So thank you for being here and welcome, and hopefully you learn a little bit about property taxes today. So very good. Representative Dietrich, please present the bill, House File 962.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, last year the final tax bill that passed contained levy limits for the local units of government, effective for taxes payable in 2009, 10, and 11. House File 962 came to me as a result of those levy limits that were passed, and it came as a request from Anoka County. And what we would like is we would like us to allow Anoka County for a special, and there are a couple of other counties I think that this might impact, a special levy outside those levy limits for the operations and maintenance of a new county public safety center that is just being completed in Andover. The levy limits passed last year, they made some exclusions for debt service, but no allowances were given for first-time operating expenses for new facilities. This new center would be completed by the end of 2009, and this exception is needed so that the county can levy for the operations of this new building. Mr. Chairman, I know that there are a number of bills this year that are proposing to repeal those levy limits, but it's my opinion that in the end, with the governor and the Senate and the House, you never know what the end game negotiations might end up like. So if you would think about this proposal, I would feel much more comfortable with this provision in the omnibus tax bill to back us up just in case. I want to mention that this bill has unanimous support of the Anoka County Board and is included in the legislative agenda for the Minnesota Inter-County Association. This bill has language that is not specific to Anoka County, but informal polling from the County Association has shown that Washington County and Blue Earth County could be in similar situations. In all cases, though, I think it's really important to note that there is no net increase in property taxes, and as these counties are at the same time decreasing their debt service levies. Now I have Terry Johnson, the Anoka County Administrator, is here to provide a little more background.
Mr. Johnson, please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Terry Johnson, County Administrator for Anoka County. You should have in your packets a handout that describes and shows the tax impacts and so forth. We were fortunate last year to have received state support through a $3 million bonding appropriation towards the regional forensic lab that's being built and incorporated into this public safety facility. The costs and the use of that portion of the facility will be shared by two other counties, Sherman and Wright, along with Anoka County. The rest of the facility will house the sheriff and administrative staff, our criminal investigation division, the patrol division for Anoka County, and for those contracted cities who contract with the sheriff for patrol services. It also holds our warrant function and the SWAT unit, boat and water safety, and so forth. So it's the dream of the sheriff to get all or most all of his department under one roof. The facility is also going to have a community room, which will be made available to the public for meetings and other functions. We've estimated that the annual operating and maintenance costs of this facility on an annual basis would be approximately $510,000. Mr. Chair and members, a few years ago we sought authority to bond for our emergency radio system. Ultimately, the legislature granted similar authority to other counties as well. In the process of seeking approval for that bill, a fiscal note from the Department of Revenue was generated showing an impact on the property tax credit program, and the state provided property tax relief to taxpayers. We were able to show that there would be no negative impact to the state for the Anoka County portion of this. We tried to anticipate the earlier concerns, and I think the handout shows that situation. We've, in looking at that handout, what we're showing there is our current debt service levy for 2000, payable 2009, is $19.3 million. For 2010, that drops off to $17.7 million. We timed the construction and opening of the Public Safety Center to coincide with the year that we finished paying the debt on the Government Center in Anoka, and 2009 was the last levy on the debt for that facility. So we have a significant drop-off in debt service. And then the final bar on that top chart then combines the new operating costs with the 2010 debt service to show that it is a little over $1 million less in 2010 than in 2009. And we calculated the impact on a $200,000 home at the bottom of that chart, again showing a reduction. So I think that's kind of all we've got to say on that. If there's questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, I think Representative Beatrice.
Keith Carlson would also like to testify, is my intention.
Mr. Carlson, are you give it this thumbs up or thumbs down?
Mr. Chairman, members, to make it brief, I guess.
We could get out the property tax principal scale.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Carlson. Any questions? Anyone else here for or against House File 962? Anything, closing comments, Representative Dietrich?
No, just that I would like to say that I would appreciate this level of flexibility for Anoka County and the other counties that this impacts, and just in case that the levy limits do not get repealed in the end here in this session. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think we all would agree with more flexibility and options for local units of government. All right. With that, we do have a quorum, so I'm going to move the layover House File 962 for possible inclusion into the omnibus report, and also move at this time House File 850 for possible inclusion into the division report. So,
thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Representative Walker, if you would share the meeting.
Representative Marquardt, we're delighted to have you present your bill. I understand this is the work of one of your work groups. He doesn't yet have it memorized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and proud to move House File 1201 for possible inclusion in the division report. And this is the second act of three acts that will be coming before the division based on the working groups that have been set up. One that Representative Dietrich chaired the other day, which you heard, which was to provide more accountability to the type of property tax system that the state offers. Coming up next week will be Representative Lanning's bill, which will provide more flexibility and mandate relief and strengthen the state and local relationship. That will be in that bill. And what this bill does, the House File 1201, is it provides more accountability for the money we spend on our property tax aids and credits, and also to improve efficiency and also increase value for taxpayers. You know, we have this huge budget deficit of $6.4 billion, and more time than ever, this is the time that we have to make sure that we know where every dollar is being spent. And in the property tax aids and credits area, we're proposed to spend about $3.4 billion. Now, you know, that's local government aid, that's county program aid, that's property tax relief, refund programs, renter's credit, market value homestead credit, the whole works. And it doesn't matter whether or not you're a city receiving local government aid or not, because every city, every county benefits from this property tax system that we have. And so one of the questions, as we're spending $3.4 billion every 2 years, or scheduled to do that, is, as a state, what are we getting for those dollars? You know, what level of public safety are we providing to residents? You know, what's the condition of streets that are out there. I mean, what type of fiscal management is being provided these residents? We really don't know. And so we have nothing to look at, no benchmarks to look at, and hopefully what this will do is provide more accountability for each and every one of those dollars that are spent by the state. It will also help to promote efficiency in city and county government performance, and finally, probably most important, provide extra value to the taxpayer. So how does this bill work? Well, first of all, before I go further, I want to give you a little background on the process and thank some people who were very, very instrumental, and some will be coming up here forward also later. But we held six meetings, each about an hour and a half long, so that's about 9 hours of meetings. And we had, first of all, a lot of help from the experts, I'm going to call them. We had people from Olmsted County, Hennepin County, Beltrami County, Dakota County, Scott County. You're going to see some of these today talk about their systems. From the cities, we had City of Minneapolis, City of St. Paul, City of Woodbury also made presentations. So much of what we learned came from those folks, and you'll be seeing some of them later. I want to thank the staff for all the work that they put in organizing and helping to draft that bill. Tremendous cooperation and help from State Auditor Otto, who's also here today. Without her help and her being willing to embrace this concept, it simply would not have moved forward. All the city and county groups that came forward and all of their help. The Department of Revenue, also very instrumental in the public. So there's just a lot of folks that went into this bill. The cornerstone of the bill, and the main part of the bill, is this Council on Local Results and Innovation. And one of the things we found out as we were trying to come up with, ultimately, some benchmarks that we could measure things by year in and year out, is that we weren't going to be able to do that in a month and a half. And so what we thought is that it became evident very quickly that we've got people that can help formulate those. So what this Council on Local Results and Innovation would do is establish 10 benchmarks for cities and 10 for counties, ones that would work for almost everyone, hopefully everyone. Now, some of these may, for example, be a survey question to get public perception on things. For example, how safe do you feel in your neighborhood, from one being not at all to, you know, feeling very safe, a number five, whatever that scoring might be. Or it might be a critical indicator, like what's the bond rating of the city or the county, just to get an idea of maybe their financial situation, whatever that might be. So they would develop those 10 and bring them back to the tax committee by February 15th of the next year. A second task that this council would have is, besides these 10 benchmarks that the state would use every year to at least be able to track improvement and be able to look at even best practices. What if you had an area or a city or a county that was doing just marvelous in an area? And you're trying to find out why is that? You would look to see, you know, what are they doing in those areas that make it work so well? So that's one. The second thing they're going to do is come up with a kind of a minimum criteria for what would be considered a performance measurement and improvement system, because that's kind of step two of what we want to do. And they would develop what would that all entail. And then finally, probably ultimately the most important thing that this group council would serve is kind of as a resource board, kind of a sounding board for other cities and counties that might want to start developing. They would have someone to go to, kind of a mentoring board. And we also established this framework that these efforts wouldn't be done in a year or two, but these efforts of trying to get more cities and counties to do performance measurements and doing them in an effective way and ultimately improving value for taxpayers to make sure this lasts long term. And part of that is working through the state auditor's office. Now, there would be 11 members on this group that initially would include the state auditor, two people selected from the property tax majority or the chair, and then two in the House property tax minority lead, the same in the Senate, and then one from the county associations, one from the state, a total of 11 people. And there's term limits there, and they roll over on the terms, four-year term. How would it work for a city? If you were to do this, and it would start in 2010, you would, by July 1st of 2010, have to produce 10 benchmarks. If you're a county, you'd have to produce 10 benchmarks that this group would have set up, that we're looking at things that can be surveyed or data that is readily available. So those are some things. So we're not reinventing the wheel here. And they would need to do that by July 1st and send that in to the auditor. Now, one of the benefits of doing it early like that is that hopefully, as already being used now in cities and counties that use these systems, is that they would be using this data they get and the perceptions from surveys from residents. They would work that into their budget process, which really begins in the summer, if not before. So they're not waiting for the truth in taxation at the end. They're doing it then. So it would be very valuable as they set the budget and looking at the data that they're getting. If they were to do that in the first year, they get the full meal deal plan, which means they would get $25 $0.25 per capita reimbursement. And it's not a reward, it's just a reimbursement. By the way, this program would be totally voluntary. But even though it's voluntary, we still wanted to provide a minimum amount of reimbursement so folks didn't think it was a mandate, even if they did this. So that would be one. The second thing that would occur is they'd be exempt from levy limits. And number three, something that's also in Mary Lanning's bill, they would not have to have that final truth in taxation public hearing. And the reason for that, because part of the things they would have to do with this data is, one of the requirements in the bill here is that they would have to make that public in some way, shape, or form. So already, they would be doing much more than what we all know in reality happens, is that they would already be soliciting input from residents. They'd be getting an idea of what's happening. They'd have to publish that. And they still have to hold the preliminary levy in September. They still have to have the meeting in December, but they just wouldn't have to have that specific meeting. It would still be advertised when it went out in the truth in taxation statements. But we think by going through this process, you're going to be doing way more than you ever would do at the actual truth in taxation meeting. All right, then, after the first year, if you only do the benchmarks, you just get the reimbursement, and you do not qualify for the Big Mac and the French fries. You don't get the levy limits or the TNT exemption. To do that, you would have to, at that year, either start, move to level two, you'd have to start working on a performance measurement and improvement system. And then if you do that, then you get all three benefits there. So that's how that works. People who put a lot more flesh on the bones are here, and we're going to go in this order. We have Tim Walsh from Scott County, Karen Harrington from Dakota County, Matthew Stemweather from City of Woodbury, and Mayor R.T. Ryback from the City of Minneapolis. State Auditor Rebecca Otto is also here. She will answer any questions if need be. So I'm just going to, if it's all right, Madam Chair, before I kind of any questions, I'd just like folks to see what we have been seeing in our working group that is, I think, really amazing and is going to show a lot of value to taxpayers.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Walsh. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tim Walsh, and I'm the Director of Community Services in Scott County, and that includes Public Health, Human Services, Community Corrections, and Veterans Services. Today I'll be speaking to you about county support for the Council on Local Results and Innovation. What I'd like to do first is to just reference, although not go into, a handout that I presented to the committee, and it is titled, Please Ask Counties How to Transform Data into Cost Savings and Cost Avoidance. And the reason that's important is it proves the value proposition of using data well. Ultimately, you don't measure things just to measure things. You measure things to turn it into value. And that value is to taxpayers, it's to voters, it's to the clients that we serve. That's really what performance measurement and improvement systems are all about, is improving value. Everything on this list saves county taxpayers either in the hundreds of thousands of dollars or in the millions of dollars. I think that's correct as I look at the list. And you'll see that there's a cross-section of many different counties and joint powers agreements and multiple county collaborations within that are represented within this list. And then I gave you some contacts if you're interested in any one of those cost savings ideas. To ground this discussion in what are we talking about, the first is performance. What do we mean by performance and in performance improvement? I like the phrase results that matter, and that really means delivered value to taxpayers and voters. That's what performance is all about. And Mark Friedman has probably one of the simplest systems out there, and he gets right to the point. He says that that performance is all about quantity of effort. Did we provide a good amount of service for the tax dollar? That's first. Second, quality of effort, which is, did we provide service well? Did we provide it well? Next, he talks about the quantity of effect. Are people's lives bettered or improved as a result? It's not a bureaucratic exercise. It's all about improving or bettering people's lives, and that's what we measure. And then finally, quality of effect. What percent of people are better off, and how are they better off? That's really what we try to measure. To get a picture of what a performance measurement and improvement system looks like, we borrowed from, some would say we pirated from, Fairfax, Virginia. They put a how-to guide out on the website, and the Scott County model is based on this model with a few tweaks. And let me just put that into some common language. When we're talking about a performance management system, we're talking about where are we going as a county? In other words, what are the outcomes or results we want to deliver to taxpayers and to our citizens? The next thing is you have to then decide how you're going to get there. And that's what program planning is all about. What are the tactical operational ways you get there to those results? Then you start looking at how will we know we are getting there? That's why you need measures. You need to be looking at the things that are valuable and important and see whether you're getting there or not. Then you do checks all along the way. Are we actually getting there? Are we actually getting to those kind of results that I just talked about? Next, of course, you look at, are we appropriately resourced? And by that I mean, do you target your budget towards those things which will produce the best results? That's what that's all about. And then finally, did we get there? That's what you do all along the way. Did we actually achieve the results? And then the added step that I put in there, Representative Marquardt, is then did you show that value to the citizens? Did you show the value of what you're doing to your citizens? Because you're ultimately accountable to them. I pulled this quote from Governor Tim Pawlenty, which I think it is really illustrative of what we're attempting to do here through the council. Government must be accountable to the people it serves. We've made a commitment to Minnesotans that state government is going to work better, faster, and show meaningful results for taxpayer dollars. We've set bold goals for the state of Minnesota, and we intend to deliver. So within that very dense quote is actually, essentially, everything that Representative Marquardt just talked about.
That was to help the bill out later on in the process.
Yeah, I don't know why I picked that quote. And of course, this aligns with what counties have said through the redesign project, which you've heard quite a bit about, which is we have a positive solutions-oriented focus for the next 5 years, hopefully beyond that. We do want renewed relationships with the state agencies to produce results. We are willing to agree to produce those results. And then finally, some of the bills that are going to be coming forward this committee, which really provide the needed relief that counties need on the local level. One point that's really important to see here, because if you haven't gotten into this kind of thing before, you might think this would be really expensive, and it's really not. You can, with just a little bit of guidance, a little assistance, a little bit of money, relatively speaking, you can produce a good performance management system. And here's two good examples. And by the way, through one of my colleagues, he said that Mark Friedman will work with us on this, if you'd like. He, you know, again, cheap, fast, and good performance management systems. Next is the same idea for technology. There's good technology out there, good software, that'll help us to do this measurement and reporting and communications and tracking and progress and all that. So that technology also can be done in a way that's relatively inexpensive, but of course it's not for free. Folks have to pay the bills just like we do. And one example of that is Insight Formation's Insight Vision product. Next, I had the chance in this interim between the work group and this committee hearing to talk to some of our friends and contacts at these various private sector groups who would just love to work with us on this. By us, I mean cities and counties. University of Minnesota, they'd love to help us out. Public Strategies Group, the Association of Minnesota Counties has already agreed to be the fiscal agent if we were to receive private funding to support the technical assistance that might be needed in this. The Minnesota Council for Quality, when we start envisioning how are you going to reproduce this or replicate this across cities or county governments, well, you know, there's a good process that could be done, and that's what they do. Insight Formation is the company I just referenced, and Results Leadership Group is Mark Friedman's group, who both has an example of a workable model that's for free on the website and also has fairly inexpensive software that helps cities and counties do this kind of thing. Next, I'd like you to speak to counties can assist a coordinated best practices review and replication. And this is an oblique reference to the fact that the state auditor is a champion of this approach, and I think would do the best job of coordinating a best practices review and dissemination of best practices. So here's some examples of what might be found through a best practices review and replication. So there's a lot out there. One of the key questions is, why don't you just let counties and cities do this all by themselves? And that's a good natural question, but here's some of the counties that are fairly deep into this. Look where the question marks are. That would probably represent about 75 counties, I'm guessing, about 75 counties that are not deep into this and do need some technical assistance, support, guidance, and actually a little bit of funds to get this done. So it really comes down to the question of what pace of growth do we want if we want to leave this to the ability of each city and county to just do this on their own without support and assistance, when will we achieve that? And then the real question, which is what drives replication of best practices? Now, what drives me is talking to our next testifier, Karen Harrington, who's worked with actually, I think, all of these counties in getting best practices going. And then another key question that has come up in discussion is, why not one size fits all? Let's just have the state do this. Why not just have the state do this? And here's the answer, I think, to that. When you talk about large population counties, they've chosen highly sophisticated strategic management systems because they're very complex systems. When you talk about Hennepin County or large Ramsey County, they're huge, and so they need very sophisticated systems and very large investments to do performance management systems. When you talk to medium-sized counties like Scott County and below, we tend to choose off-the-shelf performance measurement management systems, and those work really, really quite well for us. And then we adapt it to our purposes. And then finally, small counties, as far as I know, don't have the resources on their own to develop this. And then if you look at state systems that have done in the past, they've been very good. Like Minnesota Planning's efforts have been very good, but they're data intensive on the state level, and they tend to be actually relatively high maintenance. Whereas if you customize it to the local level, as I've suggested here, then you have each city and county that's invested in supporting that and then working in a coordinated fashion with the state.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And as Ms. Hayes comes forward, you can see why we wanted to put a lot of the work into this council. And one of the criteria in this council is that a majority of them have to have experience with these types of systems. So an initial board would probably include, hopefully, these folks right here. So, Ms. Hayes.
Thank you.
Welcome
to the committee. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Karen Harrington, and I'm the Assistant to the Operations Management and Budget Director at Dakota County. The county hasn't had an opportunity to formally take a position on this particular bill, and so today I'm testifying basically as someone who's an expert in performance measurement systems. In discussing how this bill will be of value to residents and helpful to local governments, I asked them the same kinds of questions that Tim did initially. The gauge that I kept in mind in particular was the Baldi's criteria for performance excellence. The criteria is an internationally accepted standard that embodies and recognizes best practices both in terms of management processes but also in terms of how you go about assessing whether or not you have good results.
And basically, those criteria challenge the organization to look at them, to take a look at the best in class and see if they can't improve their own performance using the guidance and the criteria. Performance measures are really an integral part of the Baldrige criteria. You cannot become a world-class organization without having data. You have to have the proof and the pudding, so to speak. You can have the best processes in place if you want, but if you don't have the data to demonstrate that you're performing well, then you're not a world-class organization. And using the criteria as a guide, I asked whether the bill would do a couple of things. One of the things that I looked at was whether or not it would provide flexibility so that local governments can continue to identify, respond to, and measure their success in addressing their own unique strategic challenges and opportunities. That ability to look locally at what's important is very, very much a part of what's called for in Baldrige and was something that I felt was important. I also looked to see if it would support and enhance the use of analysis and database decision making. And thirdly, I looked to see if it would provide new opportunities for sharing data and experiences so that learning and improvements could occur over time. And the conclusion that I came to was yes, that it's a fine start in the right direction. It does provide us with flexibility because participation is voluntary and because it limits the number of metrics that are expected of participants. Second, it supports database decision-making and sharing by creating that framework and that common understanding of what some of our shared challenges and metrics are, encouraging us to share that information not only with our elected officials but with the public. And finally, by setting an expectation that frameworks for performance measurement will be developed and applied at the local level. And most significantly, in my view, it empowers the council to develop and implement mechanisms to encourage the sharing of best practices. To me, if this was just a bill that said counties and cities need to report these 10 metrics and nothing really happened aside from that, it would just be, in essence, a reporting requirement. It wouldn't encourage any learning. That aspect of having the council empowered to think about how can we get people to talk with one another, how can we show that the best performers in our amongst our groups have information that would be of value to some of those who want to learn. That's really important. This bill, though, does recognize that performance measurement, while it can be done on a low-cost basis, it isn't typically free. It requires some kind of commitment, either of resources in terms of staffing or in terms of money. And because of that, it's offering the localities to participate some funding, and I do feel that that is also important. To illustrate how measurement can help improve public value, I'll give you just a couple of examples from Dakota County. But in giving you these examples, I want you to understand that at Dakota County, we're not just about performance metrics. Our performance metrics, in fact, are a part of a broader effort to establish a system in the county that's aligned with our strategy and focused on results. And we really have three key areas that we look at from the broadest perspective. The system really starts and ends with residents. What are their needs and expectations? What's their status? And we ask a lot of questions that deal with how our residents are situated. The second thing that's involved really is setting a strategic direction. Based on what we see with our residents, what are the right choices for us to make in terms of setting strategic direction as a county? And then finally, once we've got that strategic direction set, then we manage for results. And the metrics are, again, a part of that a piece of the pie. But I'll give you a couple of examples, as I stated. One has to do with residential survey metrics. Since 1990, Dakota County has administered on a biennial basis a residential survey. And this residential survey, I will tell you, is very thorough. It's not a short survey, for better or worse. It asks a lot of questions. We use the data from that survey to help us understand the concerns of our residents, their opinions on policy positions, their feelings about quality of life, and last but not least, their satisfaction with our services. We partner with several other counties to share the cost, and the vendor that we have encourages us to select a core set of questions that are shared amongst counties nationwide so that then we can compare our performance against others locally as well as nationwide. An example of how the data from that survey has helped us and has brought value to residents can be examined by looking at a question that we have that really asks residents, what's the most serious issue that you think faces Dakota County today? In 1990, when we first started the survey, only 12% of the residents mentioned growth in the county as their most serious concern. However, by 2001, that percentage had increased to 27%, and it was the most frequent concern that residents expressed. In response, we initiated a collaborative land protection planning process. We did another smaller survey to confirm that we were understanding correctly what the concerns of the residents were. We found out that, yes, in fact, it had to do with open space, protection of open space and farmland. And so we worked with our county board to develop a referendum. And we went out and we asked the taxpayers, are you willing to spend $20 million in order to protect open space and farmland in Dakota County over time? And the answer was yes, the first time. And so because of that, Dakota County now has more than 4,100 acres of land protected through easements in some cases and through purchase outright of land by partners in other cases. And it covers both of those categories, the farmlands and open space. And not only that, our 2008 survey shows that the percentage of people who feel that growth is the most serious issue in the county has dropped from that high of 27% in 2001 down to 17% today. One other example I'll give you has to do with what we call our navigation scorecards in Dakota County. This is sort of similar to a STAT program where you're looking at measures on a pretty regular basis and trying to take action based on that. In our navigation scorecards, we focus on these monthly and quarterly metrics. One of the metrics that's tracked in our public health department is the no-show rate for appointments at our WIC clinic. And WIC, of course, stands for Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children. And it deals with moms and kids who are at elevated risk of health and nutritional problems. The staff and managers, after looking at data, were very concerned because the no-show rate for WIC appointments was 35%. Now, what that means, practically speaking, is that our staff would plan appointments, would be ready for appointments, and in one out of three cases, the person for whom the appointment had been set was not showing up. So that was dramatically influencing productivity, and it was also causing people who wanted to have appointments to wait longer than they needed to. So what our staff did was to take a look around. They said, who's doing this better than us? And they looked at several different alternative staffing models. They found that one that has to do with same-day appointments typically has a much lower no-show rate. They spent some time thinking through whether and how we should apply that at the county, and then they went about making the changes. And the changes were really dramatic. Within the matter of 2 or 3 months, they had the no-show rate down from 35% to 7%. And that's all they did was change the way that they scheduled, and that the choice to make that change was based on the data that they had that illustrated the problem. As a result, they've increased the value for taxpayers clearly because staff productivity is higher, client wait times are lower, and the number of people that they're able to serve in a given amount of time is much higher. So, and I always like to point out in this example that this change, this huge change in productivity, was accomplished without the use of major technology. Technology is wonderful, and there are many things that we can do to automate processes and make information available, but oftentimes it's pretty expensive. This particular change was just about changing the way that you carry out the work. It didn't require the use of technology, and so I think it's a wonderful example. And in fact, this particular group has gotten recognition recently externally. They were awarded the Local Government Innovations Award from the Public and Nonprofit Leadership Center at the Humphrey Institute of the University of Minnesota just a couple of weeks ago, so we're very pleased with that. Okay. Just to close, I don't think that the value of performance measurement is in question here. Frameworks like the ones that Tim has mentioned, as well as the Baldrige criteria, all point to the importance of performance measurement. And in Dakota County, it's contributed to real results. Our satisfaction rates with our services are extremely high. Our productivity, measured as residents served per FTE, is the highest in the metro area, and we have the lowest property tax levy on a $200,000 home. So I encourage you to take a look at this bill and accept it. It's something that I feel that would be of value to the counties and cities in the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think that's very compelling. Just that one instance with the WIC program, increased productivity without increasing dollars for the program. So that's just an excellent example. I'm looking at time management. We have one more bill that has to be heard by 8:20, and we want at least 5 to 7 minutes of discussion. So the next two testifiers, about 3 or 4 minutes apiece. This is the energy that we've heard in the work group, and it is, when you can really listen to it, it's just fantastic of what they're doing. But
and what did I say? Representative Marquardt,
I'm used to the Green Acres meeting we had last night. We got those at 2:20, so very good. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Sorry about that.
Madam Chair, members of the meeting, my name is Matt Stemmettel. Yeah. I'm from the City of Woodbury, and I'm the administration analyst there. You've heard a lot of great information, so I'm just going to provide you with a brief overview of the scope of our program and some examples of the types of measurements and the impact that those measurements have had with the City of Woodbury. Our program consists of approximately 250 measures that span all of our major services and program areas. These measures are compiled into an annual report that is presented to our City Council in July of each year, and then this report is made available to our public via our website. We also participate in the International City County Managers Association Center for Performance Measurement, which provides us with an opportunity to share information and compare it to peer cities from across the nation. We value our performance measurement program for a number of reasons, first being that we feel it provides some accountability and transparency to our taxpayers, essentially providing them with an impact on investment of their taxpayer dollars. We also use it in developing our planning and budgeting documents in terms of recognizing trends, identifying issues, cost analysis, and so forth. We use it as well in program evaluation to determine if new programs or existing programs are failing or succeeding in certain areas, and then use that information to improve upon them. And finally, we use it to maintain our strategic focus in determining whether our established goals are being met, if our standards are succeeding, and so forth. A couple of examples of performance measurement in the City of Woodbury. A couple of years ago, the city decided to move forward with implementing a fully integrated public safety department, which meant that we were going to cross-train our police officers to be paramedics and firefighters. And we did that for a number of reasons. One of them was to avoid, in some respects, the budget pressures that come with a fully staffed, full-time fire department. And we felt that by cross-training members of our police force, that we could maintain high levels of fire and EMS service without needing to go to that full-time force in taking on those dollars. So we established that program, but at the same time they established service standards for which they felt that the city needed to maintain in order to have a very successful public safety department. Going from there, they also established a number of performance measures to give them an idea in the years forward of whether or not they're succeeding in those areas. And the program is relatively new. It was fully implemented in 2007. However, we feel that the program is successful, and we know that through us maintaining our response times and actually improving them in many areas. The second example is in our snow and ice control in our streets department. The City of Woodbury has been growing rapidly over the last 20 years or so, and with that, we've seen a huge increase in our street infrastructure. And along with that, there were increased demands for snow and ice control during heavy snow events. So again, we established certain standards by which we wanted to carry out our snow and ice control, and have been tracking those for a number of years. And as a result of that measurement, we've been able to create staffing plans that allowed us to maintain a high level of service in snow and ice control. As I see it, there are a number of benefits to this bill. It creates a mechanism for data comparison that a number of cities can bring together and compare data for efficiency and effectiveness improvement. It provides incentive for local governments to develop their own programs without which they may not be able to because of lack of money or staff time. I like the voluntary structure of the program because I believe that it will help ensure that data is meaningful and valid and not simply a mandate that they must report. And finally, I feel it can lead to greater efficiency and effectiveness in local government through identification of best practices in Minnesota. And it really provides, again, that mechanism to look at the data and determine who's doing what well. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much. And our last testifier is Mayor Rybak from Minneapolis, and he's got some slides to show us how that all works.
Thank you very much, members. I certainly appreciate this, Representative Marquardt, and all the members of the committee for taking a look at this, as well as to our terrific auditor who has taken these issues on. Citizens deserve to know what return they're getting for their tax dollars, and elected officials deserve to know that if you're making a decision, it's actually getting the results you want. I also believe public employees deserve to have tough scrutiny on their work, but scrutiny that's based on fact and not by random anecdote. And for all those reasons and many more, I support this very important work. Every Tuesday morning at 8:15 in Minneapolis City Hall, we have the results meeting in which one of the different departments is brought forward to look at some of the 109 indicators that we have across the board in the city of Minneapolis. It has literally revolutionized the way we deliver services and the way that we have budgeted, delivering better results for the dollar. And I believe that you can deliver that same sort of work across the state. First graph I have up here is one of those 109 indicators, and it's graffiti. We took a look at the graffiti in the city of Minneapolis. I, as a mayor, as anyone would do, can get a sense there's more or less graffiti in the city. But what was more important was to say to everyone in the city, we want you to call our 311 number, report graffiti, we'll then track it on a GIS system, and then map it. And then our police and our inspections people work together to identify what we consider to be gang-related graffiti and what we consider to be nuisance graffiti. The red dots are the most critical ones, what we consider to be gang-related graffiti. As we saw that, you'll see a map going up there along what we know as 38th Street in Minneapolis. We began to see that was the most critical work we had. So in that case, by using smart data and driving a decision, we could target our graffiti programs, especially to a micro-grant program that did community-based mural painting within that area, and were able, for relatively little money, to have a dramatic impact on that one indicator. The second one I want to do, and I'm doing this very quickly, but I think that's the idea here, right, is to, the second one is one that that I do. You're not taking that away from my time now. The second one is one that I believe that we could use consistently across the state, a pavement condition index. Now, what's important about this is that as a Mayor Lanning or a Mayor Marquardt would have gotten a complaint about a pothole in a city, we need to figure out a way to actually drive that toward a decision. So what we did was, again, we said to our citizens, call us about the potholes, which was revolutionary in itself, but then we called them again, mapped those on our GIS, coupled that with both aesthetic and driving impact, and came up with an index that really showed the conditions of our streets. As you see that index going down and you see the condition, overall condition of the pavement in the city of Minneapolis decreasing, it became clear from looking at this that we needed to make an investment. This data then drove the decision I made in my budget last year to develop something called the Infrastructure Acceleration Program, which is a $27 million five-year program to repave one-third of all city-owned streets in Minneapolis. If that happens, and as that happens, that will begin to get our indicators back up into the mid-80 range where they need to be. Again, it wasn't me randomly driving down a street and seeing a pothole, although anecdotal experience is important. It was being able to take all of that information and drive it together to get us a better result. The third one I want to show quickly is the issue of juveniles involved in violent crime. And Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I certainly appreciate the idea of having some commonality across the state, and you mentioned the issue of safety. I encourage you to drill down below that to get some very specific indicators. For instance, as we looked at this, you see some very jarring details that would be consistent with major cities across America, that as we came into the years of 2005 and 2006, juvenile crime soared throughout many cities. As we began to see that happen, we two major decisions were driven out of this. One was, first off, to say that the crime that was rising in the city was tied especially to a surge in juvenile crime. So out of that, seeing these numbers, we formed the Violent Offender Task Force that did tough enforcement for juvenile offenders, but then we also formed the public health approach to youth violence prevention. And those two actions have led to a 40% decrease in juvenile crime in the city. And we believe not only is it decreased, but it's going to stay there because of this upstream work. Three very quick examples of 109 indicators that we have across the board in the city. We welcome this work and think it's exactly what you should be demanding of cities. Whether you get local government aid or not, the state can play an extraordinarily important role in delivering more effective services. We're especially pleased to have the auditor involved because we see an auditor as a partner who puts tough scrutiny to local communities, as you should, but also is able to partner across boundaries. Our work really grew out of a couple different experiences. One is the architect of our program, Stephen Bosacker, had actually set up the results system that was beginning to work under the Ventura administration that sadly has been abandoned by the state. I would strongly encourage you to work on the architecture you already have had in place at the state, so the state also does it through your own services. We welcome the scrutiny at the city, but I think that also should happen at the state. But a final point that I think is critical. This really won't happen unless elected officials are at the table. I go to all those meetings. A council member at least is at those meetings. If you don't see the elected officials driving the decisions based on the data, no one takes the data as seriously as they need to. So I welcome this, offer our partnership to any community that wants to do this, and thank you very much for the work.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Glad to see you here. Representative Marquardt, do you have any further witnesses?
First of all, thanks to the mayor and all the witnesses for their excellent testimony and putting a face on what we could do around the state with this. So open for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions from members? If not so, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Representative Dietrich.
I hate to do this because we're on a time schedule, but I just noticed that the city of Minneapolis had 109 indicators, and then the city of Woodbury had 250 measures. Can somebody explain that to me?
Representative Marquardt or Mayor Reichert?
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, what we have done is come up with 109 indicators that are based on a good deal of work within our meetings. Frankly, half the meetings are spent on do we have the right indicator and do we have too many. I believe we need about that many, 100. I don't believe we could handle more than that and be as effective as we can be in the weekly meetings, but that's something that's really based on the local experience.
No, I would, Madam Chair,
Representative,
I'm impressed with 109 for Minneapolis. With your size and that type of thing, I think that's very streamlined. But then I have to ask, Woodbury having 250, are measures different than indicators? Is that the situation, or are you just like in high growth or something? I don't know.
I would describe the 250 measures as a wide range in type of measures. We have a number of input and output measures that are describing very easily, readily available information. We have another set of core measures, which are probably much more like their indicators that are outcome measures, that are higher level measures that would serve the public at a higher level and the council at a higher level. So it's just more of a mix of measures that I was describing.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Diaz, follow up, please. Because one thing that that has been brought out in this testimony is being able to compare counties or cities, and that would be so wonderful. How transparent for the state. But if everybody has different number of indicators and standards and measures, then the comparison becomes a little more difficult. So that's the reason for that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dietrich, that's why we're going to have this council come up with 10 the cities and counties that they all can use. So at least we can take a small portion of all of those that we can all, and so we can have a consistent look at things every year.
Thank you.
Representative
Detmer had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, can this program be run, I see the state auditor is here, could it be run through the state auditor's office versus a council? Just a quick question.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, you know, all the data will go to the state auditor, and just like she has other data for cities and counties financial, she would also put those on there so you could look at those benchmarks and so forth. And the council is going to be working, the auditor in fact is a member of the council, and they're going to be working together. And the reason we need the council is to gather minds as we look at all these benchmarks, but also so you have a resource kind of board out there, so a person wouldn't just be going to the state auditor, but could go to a person on the board and say, you know, how we just think, the board of the council sunsets in 2019, so it is a 10-year thing, but we think it's important to put people together, put these minds together, and come up with a better plan.
I'm just wondering if the state auditor, if we would give a sense to the state auditor's office to organize this and get it going and get it out to the cities. Now, does this include townships?
Madam Chair and Representative, it does not.
Okay. Yeah.
The townships were really not that interested in pursuing this. And so.
Does the state auditor would like to make a comment?
Yeah. Okay. You bet.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Representative Detmer. So I'm on the council, and this council is going to be made up of local government experts, and it is going to be balanced by size of entity in Greater Minnesota versus Metro is what I think it's going to do. And so that they can develop a set of 10 benchmarks that will work. And so these are people that have to have been involved in the past. and they've read the literature and they've worked with experts, and there's an expert here too. So once they've developed those benchmarks, then everyone uses those to measure themselves, and all the data comes into us. We're the transparency piece for the data. And the council will review each year those benchmarks, and if they're not working or something needs to be tweaked, they can tweak it. And then once a year, they'll report to the task committees in the House and Senate to let them know how it's going, what it's looking like, and hopefully, I mean, I think this is a good government measure, and I think we want good government in Minnesota. We want a strict and effective government in Minnesota. So it will be, through my office, I will be there with the council just to make sure that, you know, we're taking everything into account. And these people are very motivated and energized around this. They know that it's a good thing, but not all other entities in Minnesota are able to do this either because of staff or, you know, finances. And they'll try to work on providing that as a, you know, some information resource so they can mentor each other. And I think it could be a very good thing for our state in general, and that's why I've been involved. So.
And Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, we're trying to keep costs down. If the state auditor was to completely take this over, it would require more staff. The compensation for this council is zero. So we think, you know, we're getting a lot of work for a very, very good price.
And just Madam Chair, and the township, why is that not part of the...
Madam Chair, and they certainly could be. We think just, you know, with kind of the size of most it's, and the type of services and so forth, and talking to the folks from the township, they were certainly welcomed. So it just hasn't... It could ultimately go to townships if it wanted to be.
Thank you. Representative Workhart, Markhart, we're a little bit past our appointed time. Are there any quick closing comments?
No, I think the testifying is not at all. So thank you, Madam Chair. I would renew my motion to lay over House File 1201 into the omnibus bill.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Close nay. Laid over.
Continue, Madam Chair, on to the next bill.
Go ahead. Okay, great. The next bill is House File 561. Welcome to the committee, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Lanning, would you like to move House File 561 for possible for consideration for the property tax division report?
Will do.
And the name, there is Mr. Representative Lanning. Would you mind moving the DE2 amendment?
I'll move the DE2 amendment.
And Representative Davis, would you like to test this, I assume, is to put the bill in the author's desired format?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. All in favor of adopting the DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and member. The bill, you should have a bill summary there that would relate to the bill as amended. And basically what we're doing, we're not taking away anything from anyone, but we're adding another classification that would really help out the folks well across the state that would fall in the situation. This is brought to me by the Bed and Breakfast Capital of Minnesota, which is in Lanesboro, Minnesota. And they have a lot of folks that really have to go through the hoops to qualify under one of the current plans here. And if we could add lines 2.28 through 2.31, it would really simplify their lives. And basically what it does, it very simply says, if there's 20 rental units or less, it's devoted to temporary seasonal occupancy and is located in a township or city of less than 2,500 and located outside the metropolitan area, this would be a new property tax classification for seasonal rec. That they qualify under, if they could qualify under one of the provisions here, except it says they must provide activities such as fish houses, boats, motor, snowmobiles, downhill, cross-country skiing, if you read through there. And the bed and breakfast in Lanesboro don't qualify under that, so they'd have very similar qualifications if we can just add that, the lines 2.28 through 2.31. Appreciate your support for consideration.
Thank you, Representative David. And do you have any testifiers?
No, I'm here with all my friends.
Thank you, Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative David, I see you made changes. You included the township and cities together, correct?
Correct.
That was part of the change. What about, because I saw a problem in it originally where if you had a
a city with 20 or 24 units at one time, say one side of the lake, and the other side of the lake you had a township with they didn't qualify. Is that why you made the change?
Representative David?
Yes, we wanted to have the cities and the townships, and for this bill, the impetus here is I live in the only county that doesn't have a lake, so when you refer to lakes, I don't have a whole lot to do with lakes, so.
Okay.
That's not good Minnesota, is it? But no, it's basically the city of Lanesboro and Fulton Harmony that have bed and breakfast that really need this new seasonal rec category.
No,
but this both township and, Madam Chair, and Representative Detmer, it is both townships and cities of 2,500 or less outside the seven county metro. I believe for staff here, when we define outside the metropolitan area, are we talking seven counties or 11 counties?
Seven
counties. Okay.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, so like in an area of a larger population, then a larger resort would not qualify under this, then. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, that's correct. It'd have to be under 20 units or under.
Okay.
Any further questions? Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative David, why the 2,500 population limit?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, that number was just picked out after having some meetings with some local residents that came up. They were proposing this. 2,500 is no magic number. If the committee felt it needed to be some other number, we'd certainly be open to that.
Representative Lanning?
Thank you. Maybe Ms. Baker, Mr. Hines, could is there precedence for setting the population number at 2,500 for a special classification here, or?
Ms. Baker. Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, no, there isn't really any precedent other than when I was at a meeting with Representative Davids. They were looking for population of smaller towns, and the 2,500 is a levy limit number, and, you know, that just kind of came up as, well, it's been used a lot there. And yet, it could be, like Representative David said, any number that you wanted to pick, depending on what size city and towns you wanted to include. So there isn't anything real magical about that.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you. If I might follow up with one more question, then. What would be the classification, then, for these units that are in cities over 2,500 or townships over 2,500? What would be the difference between those properties and this what's covered here?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I think if you look at the bill summary, it shows where these units right now are coming out of, and they're coming out of the commercial category. They'd be viewed more as hotels and motels. So they're really coming out of the commercial category, moving into the 4C, and I think the bill summary actually shows the class rate difference, as well as the fact that the state general rate would be completely different, because you wouldn't be under the commercial state rate. You'd be under the seasonal rec one, which is considerably lower. So that's where the big difference would be.
Representative Lanning.
One more question, if I might. Mm-hmm. For bed and breakfast facilities that are in cities over 2,500, typically assessors classify those how?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, there is a special provision in fact, it shows up in your bill, just in current law, on page 5. It's paragraph 9. And the only reason we've ever done for B&Bs is if they're homesteaded. And the first 5 units get treated under Class 4C. And then the rest gets treated as commercial. And that is statewide. So the B&Bs, they do carve out a separate category. The units that Representative Davids was looking at is much more of kind of the, I think, kind of inns, where they aren't B&Bs, they don't have the food that's served. They're more like little small hotels that are very seasonal, and that's what his bill is directed to, is these inns.
Representative Davis, any closing comments?
Well, thank you for the hearing, Madam Chair and members. If there's any other questions, I'd certainly entertain them. Otherwise, I believe they're being laid over for possible inclusion in the property tax bill.
That's correct, Representative Davis. I did forget to ask if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this proposal. And I do see someone getting up. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Marty Schmidt, Colleen County Assessor up in Vernon, Minnesota, representing Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Just a couple of points I'd like to make in respect to this amendment. The temporary residential would lead that to motels or anything like that, just besides the resort. The other thing would be, Representative Lang already pointed it out, is the 2500. You could have situations in which you're going to have an equity issue, meaning that in one area, in one district, this one happens to be over 2500, that's going to get a different classification than the one in the next district, right down the road, that's 2500 or less. I just want to make that two points.
Thank you very much. Further discussion? If not, I hereby lay over House File 561 for possible inclusion in the Property Tax Division Report. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair Member.
And we have one more item of business, and that is the minutes of Tuesday, March 17th. Representative Bishop, would you move those?
So moved.
Minutes have been moved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. The motions are approved. With that, I adjourn the committee. Thank you very much.